Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for January 31st, 2016. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, well, we are on Iowa Caucus 2016 Eve. And going to come up on a Monday. And my first question, before we get political with this thing, do y'all, either one of y'all, know why this thing's on a Monday instead of a Tuesday? Because, I mean, almost all elections are on Tuesday. Every once in a while, there's a few states that have them on a Saturday. But pretty much the only Monday election I know of. Any ideas?
Well, it's not an election.
Well, it's
number
it's
one.
Still enough. It's part of the electoral process, and maybe that's part of it. It's caucus, but it is part of the elective process. So why is it on a Monday?
I don't know. I have never known, but let me see if I can find out.
Tim, any lead? Do you know why on that one?
No, I have no earthly idea. I've never even given it any thought, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And then another thing that I knew that I'd kind of, you know, those things you know and you forget and then you're reminded of and you go, oh, yeah, I don't realize that, or I forgot about that, is that the Republicans and the Democrats do it differently in that they both have the viability, you know, component, but the Republicans use a secret ballot and the Democrats use a just open, you know, go stand with who you want in that corner of the room, if you will. At least that's what the Lego pieces on the YouTube video that's making the rounds showed. and I thought that was kind of curious that the two parties do it differently in that, you know, a lot of times Republicans, you know, like stand up for what you believe in and, you know, they're the daddy party and, you know, you are who you are and your word is your bond and they do a secret ballot. You know, and Democrats are seen as the mama party, make everybody feel good, don't make anybody excluded. And there it's you stand up and say who you're from. Tim, do you think that's kind of a switch in roles, if you will, at least of the stereotypes?
David, I couldn't hear what you were saying, buddy. Could you repeat that?
It
I'm
wasn't
having problems hearing you.
I don't know what's on my phone there. Yeah, let me. Hopefully, I'm a little better. I'm not going to repeat it because it wasn't that good. And I know we need to get some predictions, and I'm going to try to figure what's going on my phone then. And get that worked out while I get some of y'all's thoughts. Tim, what are some of your initial thoughts or predictions on tomorrow night?
Well, you know, everybody was waiting with bated breath on this latest Des Moines Register poll. Ann Seltzer's the gold standard of pollsters, and she does this poll up there for them every year, and it's showing that Donald Trump obviously is going to win. His support is deeper than a lot of people thought. It's solid. And if his voters come out to vote, and she's saying that they will, that he's going to win the state by 5 points over Ted Cruz, with Rubio at 15 and gaining. Clinton has a 3-point lead on Sanders, which is up a little bit for her, and she may actually now win there. It's going to be very close. We're going to have to wait and see how good Bernie Sanders' turnout is. A lot of college students, a lot of young people are supporting him. Cruz, same thing with Ted Cruz. Is he going to have this vaunted turnout machine among evangelicals and Donald Trump, like Donald Trump, the man himself? Who knows? You know. And then I guess the next thing to see is after it's over, who's going to drop out. So.
Yeah. Tim,
you with me, David?
Hear me any better than you were before?
No, it's worse now.
Okay, trying something different audio-wise, and maybe that was the wrong
that's
move.
That's better.
A little better now. Well, that's good. I'm glad it's better. But it was. I was trying a little set of headphones. You know, they say those headphones make it better, but I just don't have any luck. So, well, that's what it is. Catherine, some of your thoughts on what you've been hearing going in the Iowa caucuses.
Well, I hadn't read the Des Moines poll yet, but I think Clinton's going to win. I had a conversation with another political friend of mine today, and I think she might win heartily, like more than 5 points. I think it's going to be – that's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm predicting, is that she's going to win well. On the Republican side, you know, I think Trump is going to win. I think the question is who's going to come in second on the Republican side, since there's so many of them. I don't have a sense. I think it's something like Rubio or Cruz, but I'm just not sure. I'm having a hard time getting a sense of the popularity of Marco Rubio. So I think that's really going to be the interesting tidbit, is who comes in second. Even if Trump doesn't win, like who comes in second, and what does that say about the next round of, you know, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada? What does all that say about that? So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a long night, though, I'm sure, because it takes forever.
Oh, yeah, and it's – there's not like – there's going to be exit polls coming in because the caucuses do happen, you know, after business hours, if you will, after they're just getting going when polling places would normally start closing. And so you're not going to have the trickling quite as fast. If there's a show or two you want to watch at 8 or 9 o'clock, you can get it in, because it'll be about 10 o'clock when things finally start getting through. Plus, they're in the central time zone. And, so, you know, the largest time zone is the eastern one, where Washington, New York, and we all live going in. Things about it that I see. Is my sound any better, Tim?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you better now.
Oh, good. I just thought you were going to jump in. Are you jumping in with a point then, or is it just a...
No, go ahead. I want to hear what you...
Okay, yeah, I didn't want to keep on talking if I need an audio check. Well... some things I had, you know, been hearing is, you know, Bernie Sanders, his support is really soft as far as, you know, people that are less likely to vote or hadn't voted before. And then, you know, Hillary Clinton has people that have voted before in this caucus, and they're actually they're looking at where how you spread the vote out across the state. Hillary Clinton has a lot of the more rural communities and support all across there, whereas Bernie Sanders is, you know, a lot of concentration in the college towns. They're actually trying to get some of those college students that are in-state college students to go back to their hometowns caucus. And, you know, Iowa, I'm sure, is not the easiest state to traverse. You're in the middle of your, you know, college classes, and I'm not sure how well that's going to work. So it seems like he's set up to maybe underperform slightly, and then Hillary Clinton performed better than the 45 she was getting in the poll. I saw another number, 83% of that her voters were pretty much made up their mind they're not going to switch. That's a pretty solid number. On the Republican side, it looks like Ted Cruz is really fading. And Political Wire just posted a piece on their site that – Ben Carson could be a potential spoiler. In the latest poll, he was 10% of the vote, which was fourth place, which doesn't sound great. But then if you think about the caucus process, Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum are probably not going to be viable. And their supporters are probably more likely to go to Ben Carson than anybody else. So Ben Carson could possibly get into the top three.
if he does, since there's so many voters that just seem to have an affinity for him on the Republican side, he could get a second win. Now, he won't do well in New Hampshire. The demographics there for his, you know, supporter base are not real strong, but then this could give him new life and kind of throw things, you know, back into turmoil, if you will. I know Rubio, people are starting to promote him some. I just don't know that he's going to do that well. And, of course, that probably leaves Trump, you know, winning on Monday night. I don't know if either one of y'all saw the Ben Carson piece that Tag and Goddard had put up. Any thoughts to the or why Ben Carson won't go away? Tim?
Well, I mean, at 10%, he's not exactly living with it, you know. I think he's got a devoted little group of about that percentage around the country that's going to stick with him through thick or thin. Now, Cruz claims that he's got this great turnout machine, and they're going to be there, and they're going to vote for him. The question to me is not really Carson or what he'll do or won't do. I personally don't think Carson will get 10% or will be viable. The question to me is how close is Rubio going to get to Cruz? There's no doubt that Rubio's picked up all 5 points in the polls in the last 4 or 5 days. Now, is that going to be enough? Generally, this Des Moines poll, historically, if you say you're Ted Cruz and it's showing you with 23%, you can almost bet that you are going to be somewhere between 20 and 26% because historically that poll has been very accurate in that vein. But that means that Cruz could be at 20 and Rubio could be at 18. Rubio could actually play this off as a victory if he gets that close to Cruz. He's got this 3-2-1 strategy, I think. Finish third in Iowa, second in New Hampshire, and then knock off Trump in South Carolina. I think that's what he's going for. So, and that's a long way of answering your question, David. Now, I don't really think Carson's going to hurt Cruz that bad. I think Cruz has done a magnificent job of that himself. So I agree with you that Hillary Clinton is going to win by between 0-3 and 9 points. I don't think she's going to have a double-digit win, but I think she's going to have a win. I think she's got all her ducks in a row. I think the lessons of 2008 are not lost on them. I think your point about Bernie Sanders not having his support spread out in some of those rural areas is going to cost him some delegates, even if he ran closer to her. I think his support you're going to see tomorrow night, you look at a place like Iowa City, where there's a big college, and you're going to see huge pockets of support for him in those areas, but will it be enough to carry the day statewide? I just don't think so. One caveat, if it's this close, Martin O'Malley, his supporters would have to caucus with somebody if he's not viable in these boxes, which I don't think he will be. He's got to have 15% to do that. And the polling is showing that almost 80% of his support would go to Sanders.
Really?
Now, that could tip a close election. So that's just one thing to watch out for. What do y'all think about that angle?
Yeah, that is that's interesting. It's just where does he have his bigger pocket supports? Because I have a feeling he may have some places where he's getting 7%. And other places where he's getting zero. Where he's getting zero, Bernie Sanders could have 100% of zero, and it's still zero. The other places, it could be a factor. Catherine?
Oh, well, I'm surprised by that, honestly, that his supporters would tend to go to Sanders. That surprises me.
Unless you reckon, Catherine, he's drawing from the same group that Sanders is, and that would explain it?
Well, it could be. You know, I'll be honest with you. If Hillary wasn't in the race, I would definitely be a Martin O'Malley supporter.
Oh, well, so would I.
I mean, I really like him. I think he was great on the forum this week. I think he's very compelling. So it may be people who are like, you know, I mean, I could imagine a Democrat, a strong Democrat who's just not crazy about Hillary Clinton for some reason, whether it's, you know, a holdover from 2008 because they were a strong Obama fan or, you know, whatever reason. But I just have a hard time believing a strong Democrat would go to Sanders. It just doesn't strike me as a likely. I would go from O'Malley to Sanders. Seems like they'd go to Hillary. But what do I know? You know, I'm just guessing.
Unless they're young.
The one thing I wonder about is how the New York Times endorsement, if that will play at all in Iowa, if that will have any impact. That really came as a surprise to me yesterday.
Well, they also mentioned earlier in the week the Des Moines Register endorsed Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio. Would the Des Moines paper even have an impact? And you have to think, if an Iowa paper doesn't have an impact, how in the world does an out-of-state paper have an impact?
Well, it's the New York Times.
Not
the AJC.
You would think the Iowa paper would have more play in Iowa than a paper from out of state. I mean, just like here, the AJC
David, it's not a paper from out of state. It's not a paper from out of state. It's the New York Times. I mean, there's a big difference between the New York Times and the AJC or the Chicago, you know. I mean, I think, I agree. Like, you'd think that the Des Moines Register would have an impact too, but I wonder if, you know, the paper of record, the, you know, probably most widely read newspaper, certainly in the country, if not in the world.
Well, part of that is because New York is a big place. I mean, we can get on a real sidetrack discussion, but a lot of times things are made bigger than they are just because New York City has a large population. It's like the Madison Square Garden is not that nice of an arena. It just happens to be in Manhattan, and that makes it a big deal. The New York Times is a New York paper. I mean, it's not a national paper. It covers New York sports and New York style and New York this. I mean, they talk about what goes on in Central Park, not what goes on in the park down your street. So, I mean, we just have to realize that, I mean, New York's a big city, and therefore it has a lot of influence, but it doesn't make it as important to the people in that town that you live in.
In answer to your earlier question, the Des Moines Register endorsement does have, you know, carry some weight with it, but not the weight that it once carried. I don't know if it's because we're in the internet age now of instant things. One point Catherine was alluding to, this I think true, is that probably as many people heard about the New York Times endorsement in Des Moines as they did the Des Moines Register endorsement. In the internet age, I'm not sure that newspaper endorsements mean what they once did.
I agree, and
no,
I also think
New York Times, I mean, our newspaper endorsements have mean less than they used to. A lot of times you don't even know which day they come out anymore. Like, it used to be a big deal on different races. Now it's like, really?
I also think in our very partisan environment that don't mean as much because, you know, everybody thinks that newspapers are, you know, liberal, and so they're going to even on the Republican side, they're going to endorse the more liberal. And I mean, I don't think that's accurate, but I think that some people perceive it that way.
I think and I remember used to when they had the Atlanta Journal and the Atlanta Constitution
And the Constitution was the more left-leaning paper. The Journal was the more right-leaning paper. A lot of times in every race, it would be the Constitution would endorse every Democrat. The Journal would endorse every Republican. And so in the general election, it was just a wash. If the Journal or the Constitution didn't endorse that one candidate and went over to the side, that would have been more of a big deal. So that was something to think about. I think before Lachlan McIntosh comes on, we've probably got time for maybe one little topic related to this. They were reporting a mailer that Ted Cruz apparently just hit folks with Friday or Saturday, because it just came out today, and we know the mail didn't get delivered today. But it was this mailer that talked about a rating of people's voting history, like how, you know, likely they are to turn out. And if they turned out at 55% of the time, because that's going to be a very frequent number, they got an F. Tim, have you ever heard of anything so in your face as grading supposedly their neighbor's voting history?
Well, at the presidential level, it's hard to recall a time, and this mailer that he sent out, of course, they made it very official looking, you know, that just I'm not sure what they were trying to do there. I know that Ted Cruz is an in-your-face type of guy, and that's the way he plays, but this one they're drawing a lot of fire for, and he really does not need any more negative press right now. He's had plenty of it that, you know, he already produced himself. And I'm just not seeing what they thought they were trying to do with it. I don't get it. I mean, they would have done a lot better just sending potential caucus attendees a mailer asking them to please come vote, telling them where their caucus side is, and please consider voting for him. Gee, what's wrong with that? But
well, you know what, you guys? That stuff works. There's been all kinds of testing of those kind of mailers. And that one was very, very severe. But that kind of talent, that kind of message that your neighbors vote more than you, And if you want to be a, you know, better citizen, you should vote. It works. They've tested it. I've seen the results. I've examined them. I've talked to the people who ran those surveys. It works. It's very, very effective.
Yeah, but, that was just, I guess, a little more
a severe
in your face.
Example. That was a very severe example with all the names and everything.
Yeah.
But if you send a mailer to someone and say, you know, you vote, you know, 50% of the time, but the average voting in your neighborhood is 75%, that person's more likely to vote than if you send them just a voter registration form or, you know, here's your polling place. That kind of social peer pressure is very effective.
Yeah, Catherine, I think you're right that will get voters out. Now, could they turn out and then vote for Carson or somebody else instead of Cruz? That's the question. Well,
right.
Welcome on the show for, I don't know how many times now, from South Carolina, our Palmetto State political expert, Lachlan McIntosh.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you on. Well, Lachlan, my first question, this is going to help us segue. Tomorrow night is the Iowa caucuses. How much will the results in Iowa and possibly New Hampshire have on South Carolina, or will South Carolina be ready to do their own thing?
Well, I think it's going to have an effect and probably a large effect. I think that momentum is a big part of these presidential primaries and caucuses, and the hot hand often does well. I think it's probably more important on the Democratic side, whether Bernie Sanders can kind of close the gap with Hillary here or not. And I think that that's pretty critical for him to win Iowa, I believe, tomorrow night. It will have some effect on the presidential, on the Republican side, especially if a Rubio or somebody like that does better than expected. But I think that Trump's going to be really hard to beat here.
Yeah, well, let's start out with the Democratic side, since it's a little there's not quite as many left for your candidates. Some will postulate that if Hillary Clinton were to lose in Iowa, which she's less likely to, and then lose in New Hampshire, which is a little more of a possibility, that she would still be okay because South Carolina comes up next, and African-American voters are very strongly in favor of Hillary Clinton and hadn't warmed to Bernie Sanders, but he's trying to work on that. How much of that have you seen on the ground in South Carolina where, African-American voters are being courted to either stay with Hillary or switch over to Bernie Sanders?
Well, you know, both campaigns have really large ground campaigns, and there's a lot going on. Senator Sanders just went up on TV this week. Both have been on African-American radio for some time. You know, both are knocking on lots of doors and making lots of phone calls, so there's a lot of action here for sure. I think that African-American voters don't know, are just beginning to know who Bernie Sanders is from South Carolina, and I think that that's I believe that the polls are correct. If the election were today, or the primary were today, that Hillary would get a large majority, but that's not necessarily going to be the case, a month from now, when the primary. You know, again, a lot will depend on how Bernie does in Iowa, New Hampshire, and even Nevada, which is before South Carolina. So, I do think that Bernie could make great strides here in that period of time. I think that his deficit here is more about not being known than anything else.
Yeah, just one more question before I pass it around to Catherine and Tim. Kind of following up, and you may not know this number, but what percent of the African-American vote is female as opposed to male? And I'm sure it's majority female just because most voters are more likely to be female. But then African-American, I've heard a lot of states that it is more female. And then how much do you think those voters then are going to vote for to make history again? They made history in 2008 with an African-American. This time they can make history again with a woman, and then that way they kind of made history with both of their identities.
I think that the biggest old voting block will be African-American women. I don't know exactly what percent that would be, but that'll certainly be the plurality of voters. I think the electorate overall will be between 55% and 60% African American, and majority women, of course, probably 60% overall with both races. I believe that African Americans were supporting Hillary 8 years ago in South Carolina heavily until Obama won Iowa, and then everything changed. And I think that at the end of the day, voters are going to vote for the candidate that they think is the best and is to help them and help their lives the most. And I think that's what it's going to come down to again. And I think what Bernie does in the next two or three contests is going to tell the tale whether he can compete in South Carolina or other states after that.
Yes. Well, I'm going to pass it over to Catherine, and then she'll pass it over to Tim. Catherine?
Thanks so much for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate it. We've all been waiting for these primaries and caucuses for so long. It's really amazing that it's finally here.
yep.
So you said that they have both campaigns that, well, actually, the Democrats both have people on the ground, Bernie and Sanders and Clinton. What about O'Malley? Anything for O'Malley in South Carolina?
He's got a state director. But to my knowledge, that's it. One staff person.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much out of money. And what about on the Republican side? What is the you said you think Trump's got it?
I think I think something would really have to change between now and then. Of course, with that clown show, it certainly could. But Trump's kind of tailor made for the South Carolina Republican, and apparently for the New Hampshire Republican too, from the polling that's been out. But I think he's got a very large lead. and Cruz is second. And like a lot of the other states, and you know, the establishment candidates are just getting whacked, and it's just hard to see that change again unless something bigger changes on the bigger picture. But I would, yeah, I would say Trump by double digits at this point.
Wow, that's scary.
Yeah.
And what kind
yeah.
of things are? I mean, do they have a ground game? Are they like? Do you feel like they're, you know, making calls and canvassing, or are they? You know, do they have stuff up on the air? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah,
or do they not have to do anything?
Yeah, Trump's been on TV here. Rubio's PAC, I believe, is on TV here. And, you know, of course, I'm not on their mailing list, but I'm sure there's lots of mail, and I don't listen to AM radio. So I'm sure all that's going on, and I'm not seeing it. But Rubio's the only one I see on TV. But, yeah, I think that they all have. You know, they're all putting a lot of effort in here. You know, obviously, field on the Republican side can be a little bit different than the Democratic side, but I think that there is a pretty robust campaign going by. You know, I'd say five or six of them, really, at this point.
Okay, that's really interesting. I'm going to pass it along to Tim. Go ahead, Tim.
Good evening, Lachlan. Thanks for being on with us again.
Thank you.
I got to know, is there serious talk in South Carolina about the possibility that Governor Haley might be on the short list of vice presidential running mates?
Well, there's a lot of talk about that in the governor's mansion, I feel confident. But, you know, you know, clearly, she's putting herself out there for that. You know, I think that she would add something to a ticket. I have a hard time seeing Trump or Cruz, who I think are going to be the nominee picker, though. I don't think they're going to pick somebody as mainstream and you know, respected within the party that, like she is. But I think she would love to be the vice president. Obviously, she's doing things to put herself in that light. But again, I mean, in the response to the State of the Union, she went after Donald Trump. He's not going to pick her. Ted Cruz isn't going to pick her. So, you know, I would say her chances of being vice president just because of those two factors are almost zero at this point.
Is she still a rising star in the Republican Party?
Well, I think that she is, but the question is, what is the Republican Party? What's it going to look like in a year? You know,
yeah, that's true.
It's hard to kind of judge that if the mainstream, if the grown up, so to speak, and it's hard to believe we'd call Marco Rubio a grown up, but if people like that took back the party, then yeah, absolutely, I think that she would be a rising star. But you know, at this point, the party's in chaos, and the crazy people have taken over, and of course that's their own fault. They've been flirting with this for 40 years, but you know, she, like a lot of these people, may be up just with kind of without a party pretty soon. But certainly, yeah, if the grown-ups take back control, I think that she would be in that position. But you know, she's term limited, so she's not going to run for governor again. She's not going to run against Tim Scott next year. So she really, for U.S. Senate, Lindsey's up in is up in 5 years, so she'd have to wait a good while to run for anything else in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, true. Well, the latest polling in your state is showing that Hillary Clinton has a 57-point lead among African-American voters. Man, that is a massive lead. Is there realistically anything that Bernie Sanders can do to shake some of that loose?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no question that on primary day that she's not going to win by 50, the African-American vote by 57 points. I mean, I bet everything I have on that. I mean, he is going to close the gap. He is already closing the gap. Keep in mind, he just went on TV Wednesday. So he's already closing the gap. It's just a question of how much. And yes, if he can win Iowa and win New Hampshire, get that kind of momentum, just got to remember, he's got plenty of money. So he's going to be able to go up, you know, blow for blow with Hillary. He's got a bigger ground campaign in South Carolina than she does, and more staff than she does, from everything I've been told. She'll be able to match her. And I think much like in 2008, after Obama won Iowa, a lot of voters, white and black, and South Democratic voters, white and black, in South Carolina, started taking a fresh look at it. And I think that what he does tomorrow night is going to have a huge effect in what happens in South Carolina. Can he win South Carolina? I don't know. But you know what? He doesn't have to. If he loses South Carolina by single digits to Hillary, then the momentum will continue to grow for him as they head on to the other states. And again, he'll have the money to go to play in these Super Tuesday states. And that's what people forget about this situation is that when these states come in a hurry, the Super Tuesday states, you know, if you're Martin O'Malley and you don't have money, you can't compete. You can't spend a year in Texas like you can in Iowa or California or wherever. It's one after the other, and you have to have money. And he has it. And that's not going to dry up anytime soon.
All right. Thank you, sir. And with that, I'm going to pass it back to David. David?
Yes, Lachlan, since we last talked, Lindsey Graham has dropped out of the race, and then he endorsed Jeb Bush. Just kind of give us a post-mortem on his campaign, and then how much of an impact or help will he be to Jeb Bush?
I mean, you know, his campaign, other than, I think, some important statements that he made about the direction of the Republican Party, was pretty irrelevant, obviously, even in South Carolina. He is very unpopular with the Democratic base, with the Republican base everywhere now, not just in South Carolina. So I give him credit for being brave and saying some things that really need to be said. If he wasn't such a whack job on foreign policy, I might could vote for the guy. But, he said things that needed to be said, but his campaign was hardly noticed anywhere, you know. And he doesn't have a strong following in the Republican primary voters mean that his support would sway anybody. You know, maybe some donors. It might help Bush raise a little bit of extra money in South Carolina, but that's really about it.
Yeah, and he really didn't pick a guy with a lot of upside, if you will, either. Well, talking about the politicians in your state, and I think we've talked about this before, Tim Scott seems to be the most popular and kind of the darling of conservatives. Any chance that he would get a look at vice presidential nominee?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that, he's popular because he kind of keeps his mouth shut and does what he's told. And, have any of y'all ever actually heard him speak? Think about it. I don't think he's really U.S. Senate material. He's a very fortunate man to be in that position. But I don't think that anybody would put him as vice president. I just don't think there's enough there.
I've heard Sarah Palin speak, too, and I'm not sure she should be in charge of a bank sale. So, it's the low bar there on the Republican side at times.
That is a good point.
Yeah, Paul Ryan was a little bit of a step up for him from Sarah Palin. Well, you've been on the past and talked to us about the Charleston mayor's race. And we just wanted to kind of get a little follow-up on that. I'm sure that election happened, and you had told us about it for several visits in a row. So kind of give us the recap there.
Yeah, the election did happen. There was a runoff. Both of the candidates in the runoff were Democrats, John Sefenberg, and who's a local real estate guy, and Leon Savernakis, who's a member of the House from the Charleston delegation, and Tecklenburg won in the runoff. First new mayor we've had in Charleston since 1975. He was sworn in, January 11th. So he's just getting started, putting his team together and whatnot. He certainly has massive shoes to fill. But, Charleston is a booming city, and population-wise, tourism-wise, everything else. And, I certainly believe that the foundation's there for him to be successful. There are a lot of needs to in a growing city like Charleston, a lot of infrastructure needs. So there'll be some big challenges.
Yes. Any other things going on in the state that we may have missed being outside of it?
Yeah, no, it's the presidential primary is taking up all the oxygen and the energy, as you might expect. Next year, Tim Scott is the only statewide race up. And, he is, like has been mentioned, is very, very popular, and I don't think there would be any kind of serious challenge to him from the Republicans or the Democrats.
Yes. Well, I'll go ahead and ask Catherine and then Tim if they have any further questions. Catherine? Tim, any questions for you?
Yes, sir, I do have one. I was looking at this same poll, and on the Republican side, in the breakdown, I see here that Trump actually leads with a plurality of evangelical voters there, even over Ted Cruz. Now, I'm really having a hard time picturing how an evangelical voter up in Spartanburg is going to choose Donald Trump over Ted Cruz or Ben Carson. What's the deal there? Why is Trump so popular with evangelical voters in South Carolina?
Well, obviously it doesn't make sense on paper. None of this does. But it's certainly been the election season that doesn't make any sense in particular on their side, on the Republican side. You know, I would just say that, look, I mean, I think that evangelicals in South Carolina might be a little different than evangelicals in Iowa. In Iowa, they might be a little more serious about it. South Carolina, it's more of a cultural thing, I think, as you know. And I think that, you know, kind of rhetoric that Trump spouts, you know, the racism and the nativist kind of sentiment is popular among evangelicals. Yet, does he believe he was pro-choice just a few years ago? Should that matter? Well, you would think it would, but, you know, I think that he talks the language that those kind of people want to hear, you know? And I think that I would expect Cruz to focus heavily on South Carolina in particular, since he's probably not going to do very well in New Hampshire. So I would expect him to make some gains. You jog my memory a little bit. There is some Cruz TV attacking Trump here on the abortion issue. I did see that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Trump remained very strong in the evangelical community, even if Cruz does make some gains.
Is that part of what you were talking about when earlier in this segment you said that the Republican primary was, I believe you put it as, made to order for Donald Trump, that the state was made to order for him? Is that part of what you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't think that South Carolina Republicans would love a brash billionaire from New York City? But they do. And you know, Trump is a smart man, and he knows what these kind of people want to hear. He knows that they're angry and ignorant and scared and racist, and he says exactly what they want to say, and he says it beautifully, and they love it. And you know, these are folks that, you know, have been, you know, victims of the right-wing media for so long now that they're convinced that the country is about to fall apart, right? They're absolutely convinced of that. And they don't, in their minds, when they look at the mainstream Republican Party leaders, like the former speaker being a great example, they don't understand why they're not fighting Obama harder. Now, for us, that seems ludicrous. But, you know, we also aren't brainwashed, and we realize the country's not about to fall apart, or the country's actually getting a little stronger. So in their minds, they think that America's about to fall and that these are the end days, and then they need something dynamic, something we've never done before, something totally different. And if you think about Trump and how he talks to them, that's exactly what he's saying. They're all stupid. You know, he uses very simple words that they can understand. They're stupid and I'm smart. They're weak and I'm strong. And I can get things done. And we'll take care of those immigrants. And we'll see, you know, all this, the kind of like exactly the language that they want to hear. You know, Trump's been kind of sitting back watching, you know, the right-wing media and what it's done to people over the last decade or two, and he's just playing right into it. I think that, you know, it's hard to feel sorry for the Republicans because they've done this to themselves.
Yeah. You know? Well, I'm gonna follow that up with one tough question. I'm not sure you can answer it. I'm not sure anyone can, but here we go. If Donald Trump wins Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, do you see
a way he can be stopped from winning the nomination.
Yeah, and I threw Nevada in there too because I think he's going to win Nevada. I don't see it. So let me choose my words carefully. Is he going to be the nominee? Probably. But there will be an effort like we've never seen before to take him down. And it's hard to see it working, but it's going to be interesting to watch, that's for sure. So I couldn't see it happening in my own eyes. But again, you know, who knows? Who knows this year? It's
In this year, who does know for sure? Yeah.
We don't know how much money that he has to spend on his campaign. You know, there's so many things we don't know about this situation that makes it hard to predict, you know.
Well, do any of you think that he might be having buyer's remorse at all? Like, that's what I keep thinking is that he's in his most private moments, he's thinking to himself, what the heck have I gotten myself into? This is just a joke.
Yeah, I know,
and
right?
Now, like, I mean, just think about it. He's not going to want to sit in the White House all day and talk to people that he doesn't like. You know, it's going to be an awful job for him.
He's like the dog that he's going to be like the dog that caught the car.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's just going to like get on TV and say, you know, psych, I'm not running. I'm going back to New York. You people suck.
Exactly. I mean, because he's going to have to give up, you know, all his like, you know, flying all around and. You know, he's going to have to, I mean, his life is going to change dramatically if he were to, I mean, because you have to go into the general election thinking you're going to win. So,
right.
You know, you have to contemplate what that, I mean, well, you don't have to, but it would be wise to contemplate what that means. I just wonder sometimes if he's like, dang, I wasn't expecting this to happen like this.
I know, I do too.
him.
I do too. Yeah, I wanted to shake things up. I had no idea.
But the other thing I wanted to say is I bet that every parliamentary procedure expert is checking all those rules to figure out some way that they can do something at the convention that gets him out of there. I mean,
you know that
all the prominent Republicans, both elected and donors, are the you know mainstream are working that they're trying to work an angle. I'm sure.
But so far they've done a really poor job of it. You know what they need to do is figure out one candidate, whether it be Bush or Rubio or Kasich or whomever, to be their guy. And as they keep splitting up that segment, which is already a small segment, the establishment section, if you will, it makes a Trump or even a Cruz nomination that much more likely. And so far they're doing a very poor job at it.
Well, they didn't think it was going to come to this because they thought they had more. They already thought they were the puppet master, but they weren't.
Right. They thought that sooner or later the media would expose these people and that would be the end of it. But they've created a situation where their voters don't pay attention to the media anymore. They watch fake news. And so they don't even know, and they don't believe anything they hear in the mainstream media anyway. So, again, it all goes back to them. They built this, as they like to say.
Yes. Well, Lachlan, we thank you for coming on and keeping us informed with South Carolina. And I'm sure that we'll call on you in future weeks as well.
Sounds good. Hope so.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Political expert extraordinaire from South Carolina. He's our person we call on when we talk about South Carolina politics. And, you know, I guess it was last 2014, you know, South Carolina was one of the most hotly contested states because they had two Senate races and a governor's race. But, of course, when you have all that action, then you have to fall back and not have quite as much. But it could be that, South Carolina is that next fringe, if you will, of emerging purple states, along with Georgia, Arizona, maybe Texas, and South Carolina's right there with them. So we'll, kind of keep track of that as well. One thing I was noticing is, in addition to the caucuses, is the weather, and weather's not the greatest podcast topic because it really didn't hold up. But in this case, Iowa is bracing for a pretty major winter storm. Do y'all think that'll have any impact on the caucuses, or are people in Iowa just so used to snow that it's no big deal? Catherine?
Well, you know, I think it always has, you know, a storm always has some impact. Yeah, they're used to it. But, you know, I mean, if it slows you down getting from work to the caucus or from home to the caucus, it certainly could have an impact. Hopefully they'll be thinking ahead and, you know, planning ahead like you do when you live in that kind of weather. So, yes, it will probably have an impact. How big an impact? Probably not that big.
Yeah, do you have any idea which candidates it might affect, if it did affect them?
Well, you know, I was going to say it might affect the Democratic side a little bit more depending on what time it hits, because the Democratic process in the caucus is a little more ponderous and takes like 2 to 3 hours, whereas the Republicans generally get their doings done in all 30 minutes or so. I don't know why the Democrats don't streamline that thing a bit. But, you know, if you watch it on C-SPAN, you'll understand what they do. And, by the way, that's where you should watch the Iowa caucuses, because they actually go live to these caucus sites without any commentary of any kind, and they just walk around with cameras and listen to people, and you watch the whole thing unfold as if you were there. And the Democrats really, really, really take a long time to do this.
Yeah.
So it may affect Democratic turnout more than Republican turnout. And that's another thing to watch tomorrow night, guys. High turnout, who do we think it helps? Trump? And on the Democratic side, real high turnout would have to help Bernie Sanders, right?
That's what they say, that would be who it helps, is that conventional wisdom. Of course, you have to see, you know, in reality what happens. And that's another thing. A lot of times, you know, we hear in regular elections, even in Iowa, regular elections, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, the poll lines are really long at X polling place. You can extrapolate something from that. It'll be 6 o'clock at night, and there won't be any lines at any caucus places because they hadn't started. And so I guess there could be some same-day registration for some of that somebody could get something from. But it's such a later process and more speculative. And, Kim, I think you're right in that early on, at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, if you watched one of these caucuses happen, that's going to be more valuable than just simply hearing somebody tell you what they think's going to happen, because that's going to be about what they can tell you tonight or this morning or anything else. So,
well,
good call on the C-SPAN, watching that early on at least.
Have you ever watched one?
I think I have seen pieces. It's been a while. Yeah, but it is.
I watched the 2004 Iowa.
You know, Catherine, you were right. This is not voting at all. I mean, it's nothing like an election, to be
honest.
Right,
it's not an election.
You don't even caucus at the same place you vote at.
Right.
It reminds me of watching a PTA meeting or something start.
Or it's, to me, it's a lot like a county convention.
Yeah, similar.
Which we don't have in Georgia, but, you know, some states have them. I caucused in Michigan. Michigan used to have caucuses. I don't think they do anymore. I caucused in Michigan in 1988, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And my vote wasn't counted because, was it 88 was the caucus? Is that right?
It was.
88
yeah, so it was,
yeah.
It was 88.
Everybody,
I was.
That was
Oh yeah, that was. But I was caucusing for Jesse Jackson, and I was in line. It was in a hotel that was a hotel like conference room that was rented by the Democratic Party. It was not public. You know, I can't remember how you got. I guess you just had to be a registered voter, but it wasn't like at a public polling place. And I was talking to someone in line and mentioned that I was caucusing for Jesse Jackson. I mean, we're just talking. We're all Democrats, right? Well, the people behind me were big Dukakis supporters, and they challenged my vote at the table. I mean, we were a big, long line, like an hour line. So I remember being a little irritated with the Dukakis people that day. I can't remember what the challenge was. It must have had something to do with my address or something. I don't remember. But it was a nightmare. It took forever. And that was just, you know, I mean, that was a long time ago before it was, I don't know. It was a long process, and then my vote didn't even count, so I was irritated.
Yeah, the Dukakis, though, I remember reading things. Their campaign was a lot more vindictive than he was by in a lot of ways. There were several things happened in that campaign that they did. Well, Catherine, you mentioned Michigan, and we hadn't spoken about the Flint, Michigan crisis, and I know she had posted on it. And I'm obviously, being a home state resident, give some feelings. Real quickly, just in the last minute or two, share some of your thoughts and feelings.
I can't really hear you very well, David, but I think you're asking about the Flint. Are you talking about
it? The Flint, Michigan situation.
Yeah, it's really horrifying what's happening there. But I do want to give one shout out to my hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where Rick Snyder's permanent residence is. That's where his home is. And so apparently he was out trying to have a beer or something the other night, and he was heckled out of a local bar. Like, he had to leave. And then the next day he was whining about it. I tried to go out to a bar, and I was heckled. Yeah. Maybe you should go to a bar in Flint, see what happens.
Yeah, Flint's just had a lot of tough times. I guess Roger, me, you know, that kind of talked about the auto industry living. And it just hadn't seemed to rebounded since then. And, of course, you would think anywhere you live, clean water is almost a basic right. And they kind of had that taken away from them.
Well, I think we're going to see more of this. There's already another. They're testing some water in a city in Ohio. And, you know, there's a lot of groundwater that's polluted by industry and by – I mean, this was much more outright because it was, you know, a change in the source of water. But I think we're going to start – I think over the next decade we're going to start seeing that there's a lot of polluted water that we are drinking and using that we don't know about. This is a much more dramatic example, but I think this is the beginning of some startling revelations about the safety of our water.
Yeah, I guess one fear I have is that people then start using bottled water to you know, all the time, even when they need to, and then you'll create a new environmental problem. Obviously, the folks in Flint have no choice, but then there's going to be people where their water that comes out of their tap is just fine, and they're going to start using, bottled water and what have you, and creating, you know, more trash that has to be dealt with to create a new issue. I wonder, how many people, if you start hearing people moving out of Flint because of this? I mean, they're just like, well, my job's not that great. I've just had enough. I'm moving.
Well, you know, the poverty in Flint is terrible. It's not like there's a lot of places they can go. I mean, you know, it's not that simple to move if you're poor. You can't just, you know, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, moving is not a very, you know, reasonable solution to that problem. I mean, it's just not. I mean, imagine.
Well,
you've got three kids
and
you're trying to,
move,
you know.
But then part of you just might be like, hey, if you got a fast food job in Flint, go, hey, I'm going to move somewhere else and get a fast food job there. I mean, there's no anchor to them just to flee the city. And I'm sure a lot of people have already gone. Tim, you had something?
Well, I was just going to ask, Catherine, since you are from Michigan and you stay tuned in to what's going on up there, are the people of that state pointing the finger directly at Governor Snyder over there?
Oh, yeah.
Is he getting the brunt of the blame?
Absolutely. Because he put that guy in charge, the guy who did the change, and then I need to make sure that I'm not 100% clear on all this, but I think he then took that guy from Flint and put him in charge of the Detroit Public Schools.
Oh gosh.
I think that's the way it works. So
that kind of sounds
yeah,
like
it,
the guy that did the Judge the Horse shows and then managed FEMA. You know, I mean, it's just like we're just going to put him in charge of everything. No matter how, you know, diversely different those things are, in charge of
I'm
clean water,
I hope I'm right about that. I'm
going to
check that. I'm going to check that and have the make sure I'm right about that because I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. They are definitely pointing the finger at him. And you know, I have a couple of Facebook feeds that are all about Michigan and Ann Arbor and. There's a lot of anger and a lot of outrage over this whole thing. And, yes, they're definitely pointing the finger. I mean, it might – you know, I live in an echo chamber. All my friends think like me. But I think there's a pretty resounding hatred for him, for the governor.
Yeah, and he won re-election, didn't he? So he'll be term limited.
Yes.
He did. For next election.
I've seen impeach. I've seen headlines about impeaching and you should resign now and all this kind of stuff. So who knows?
Yeah,
and the president isn't happy about it either.
No, certainly so. I mean, I'm sure a lot of folks are outraged outside of there. Well, that's been the Kudzu Vine for this evening. Well, a note about next week, it's the Super Bowl, and as we've done for many years now, we will have a show, so if you're podcasting this, you really won't see a difference. But if you try to listen live, at 7 o'clock, we'll probably be in the first quarter, and we'll have laid that show down somewhere around 2 to 3 o'clock. We'll have to figure out our schedules and see when's best. But we won't be live at our normal time, but we will have a show next Sunday.
Okay.
Good night,
everybody.
Good.
Watch C-SPAN.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and